This is your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Last Wednesday, in a surprise announcement, Senator Chuck Schumer and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin said they reached an agreement on a $739 billion reconciliation bill they're calling the Inflation Reduction Act. It includes $370 billion in tax incentives and other support for renewable energy, a 10-year extension of tax credits for wind and solar, and $60 billion for environmental justice measures. It also includes unprecedented support for new drilling. Joining us to discuss the bill is Marianne Lavelle, an award-winning reporter for Inside Climate News. Her latest piece is called Senate Democrats Produce a Far-Reaching Climate Bill, but the price of compromise with Joe Manchin is years more drilling for oil and gas. Hi, Marianne. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, glad to be here.
Great to have you. So you write, to seal their surprise climate deal with Senator Manchin, Democrats conceded that their only hope for advancing a plan for a clean energy future in Congress was to bind it up in a lifeline for fossil fuels. Before we talk about that, Marianne, do you have any idea what happened behind the scenes? Why did Senator Manchin finally decide to come to the table and agree to this bill?
Well, I think that it was many folks were working on him from all different sides. And one thing that seems to have been clear is that certain businesses, including utilities that supported, you know, this kind of climate bill, reached out to him. And I think Senator, other senators like pushed for the industry to call him. Larry Summers, who was a climate advisor early in the Obama administration, is known to be, you know, just as concerned about inflation as purportedly Joe Manchin is. He urged him to support this and that it would not be an inflationary bill, but would help consumers in the long run. And I think the other thing that was important was that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi promised to work later this fall on a bill that would kind of ease up the permitting process for new fossil fuel pipelines, export facilities, that sort of thing. We don't know what will happen to that or if that has any chance of passage, but that seems to have been a promise that he extracted that was really important for him.
Let's first talk about the tax incentives for clean energy. You report that the legislation includes almost $370 billion in incentives, by far the biggest federal investment ever in addressing climate change. So tell us about this. You also report that tax credits for renewable energy for the first time would be extended for 10 years, which is a major boost for wind and solar industries.
Right. Just think about it. Every year, and the solar and wind energy industries, they had this advantage that their costs were decreasing, demand was high, but they never knew what the tax situation would be from one year to another. This time, for the first year, they have like a 10-year window where they know what the law is going to be. They can plan, especially the larger, more complicated projects. They know what the tax credits will be. Even as important as extending them is the fact that this bill would make them more flexible. Not to get too much into details, but certain tax credits, especially for solar, in the past, the federal tax credits have, you know, kind of lost their value over time because solar has gotten less expensive. And this time, solar projects are going to be able to get tax credits for their production over time, not just the initial investment. So it's a big deal for the solar industry in particular. It really is important. And there's a lot of economic study that's come out recently that says that this, given our energy situation right now, this might actually be the cheapest, most efficient way of making a clean energy transition happen, even better than carbon taxes, which aren't that popular with the public, but clean energy incentives are.
Because as you point out, and you just alluded to this, the renewable energy industry will finally have time to develop and bring these technologies to the market, knowing that they will get the tax benefit over the next decade.
Right, right. It creates this very stable, clear U.S. policy that favors cleaner energy. And there's a lot of good research that this really is positive from both a political and economic standpoint.
Marianne, we just talked about how frontline communities are hit the hardest by, for example, these plastic plants, the latest one. Mm-hmm. The Saudis are getting involved with Exxon, or have already, I should say, because the plant is already up. How does this affect frontline communities? The bill does include $9 billion in consumer home energy rebate programs for low-income people to electrify appliances. But beyond that, how will this bill affect frontline communities?
Yes, there's even more than that. There's $60 billion, which is more than ever before allocated to really address the over-pollution burden in these disadvantaged communities, to create clean energy projects, to create projects to really address what those frontline communities are dealing with. And we don't know what shape it'll take. It probably will be almost a community by community sort of thing with the communities, deciding what is the best approach for helping them overcome the problems that they've had. But I just want one example is things like school bus pollution is just such a big burden. All transportation pollution is such a big burden in those communities. This would potentially give them funding to electrify and go to zero emissions sort of vehicles and help reduce that burden.
We're almost out of time. We're going to have you back to talk about the bill, but I do want to talk just quickly about the most controversial provision of the bill. It would require continued development of oil and gas on federal lands and waters for a decade. The deal would actually prohibit the Interior Department from approving renewable energy development over that period, unless it also opens lands to oil and gas development.
Right. This is something that the government has never done before, but it really requires that the administration, whatever administration is in place, it offer public lands or offshore for leasing to oil and gas before it opens up the acreage for leasing to renewable energy projects. This, again, was something Joe Manchin insisted on. One thing to keep in mind is the bill also would really increase royalty fees on the oil and gas sector. Between that and some of the other things that it's doing in the economy, including incentivizing electric vehicles, there's a hope that there'll be less demand from the oil and gas industry for these offshore and public lands acreage we just don't know what impact that will have. It throws them a lifeline. We don't know if it will be decisive or not.
In our remaining minute, Marianne, this bill needs all 50 Democrats to vote yes. We're not expecting one Republican to vote in favor. According to reports, Senator Kyrsten Sinema has not said whether she will support this bill. We don't have time to talk about how it will be paid for with taxes, but apparently she's not happy with one of the taxes that would affect the wealthy. Are you hearing anything behind the scenes about Kyrsten Sinema and where she stands?
This is what everyone is wondering. She's not showing her hand yet. And I think that the only thing we know is that Joe Manchin said that there's a lot in this bill that was put there to address some of her long-term concerns. I think that we'll just have to wait and see. She's so pivotal to this getting done. I can't imagine that they won't try to address what her concerns are and try to keep this package alive. It's really important for the Democrats as they go into November that they have this accomplishment to show on climate.
Marianne Lavelle is an award-winning reporter for Inside Climate News. Marianne, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. We will definitely do another show about this bill with more details. We also just wanted to talk about quickly the show we did last week about oil and gas prices. Well, as expected, ExxonMobil and Chevron said on Friday that profits rose to record levels in the second quarter. You can find that show at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.